Welcome to the DARE podcast, where it is all about helping people overcome anxiety and panic attacks. The DARE app has over 1 million downloads and is free to download at dareresponse.com. Now, without further ado, here is the DARE podcast.
Hello.
Oh, there you are.
Huh? I forgot to put my earbuds on.
Hi, Julie. Welcome.
Hey. Hi, Julie.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you? I'm going to just rename myself so everybody can see who you are.
Oh, yeah. True. Good. So good to have you, Julie. Thank you.
I'm excited to be here. Are you both in New York?
No. Unfortunately not. I'm in South Germany.
Oh, are you? Wow. Yeah. And the time zone's okay for you? What are you?
Yes, I'm in the evening. Yes, I'm in the evening. It's 6 p.m. here. You're in Canada, right?
I am. I'm in the Rocky Mountains in Canmore, Alberta, Canada, is where I live. It's just outside of Banff National Park.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sounds and amazing. I'll put my last name there too, in case they want to know. Yeah. So have you been?
Good. I just want to see, I'm just checking to see. I couldn't open the chat before. Yeah, we have about 42 people here now. Looks like 150 people registered for the webinar.
Are you pleased with those numbers? It sounds good to me.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. We're pleased with two people. We're just glad to talk to anybody.
Yeah. And Julie, you are our first special guest on the monthly webinars, which is so great. We are so excited because I think, or we think that people at some point will get sick of just listening to us, repeating things. And it's always great to have new input from other experts.
Yeah, I see in the chat, never. Yeah, you all say never, but at some point you're gonna get tired of us.
I think we get tired of us before others do. I'm sure your community finds a lot of comfort in knowing you're there for them every month, is it?
Yes, we do this every month for all our app subscribers. And we just started these masterclasses 3 months ago. I think you're our third masterclass. Yeah. We didn't think about doing this with the other two guests. So if we ever loop them back again, we'll ask them to join us again. But so anybody who's listening in, part of the chat, if you want to pop in and say hi and where you're messaging from, I don't know if you've seen it or not, but if you scroll down halfway through our app, you'll see a section for guest masterclass. And this one is called Effortless Sleep. Okay, London, Greece. Yeah, we have got everybody here.
Has anybody
in the chat, anybody's been able to listen to any of the meditations in this, in the masterclass? Love to hear if anybody here who's listened to one or some Pakistan, Pennsylvania, Canada.
Yeah, we get so cool. Pakistan. Hi, Amar. Oh, we have somebody from Germany, Kevin. Hi.
Oh, good. Masterclass. Yes. Good. Okay. So we thought we'd have Julie come in, who is, you know, the author and creator of all these meditations too. If you want to chat a little bit about your program, how you developed it, what you find, you know, people find it most helpful, where people might get stuck on it. We get a lot of people that are stuck in the fight of sleep. And there's a big difference between good sleep hygiene and then desperately trying to control something that's not supposed to be actively controlled, you know? So I just loved how your meditation sort of tied in with this idea of, I said to Aida before, I'm like, she even wrote like not fighting wakefulness. I said, we talk about that all the time. So please tell us a little bit about your program and your meditations and other things you might offer if people are interested after the call.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate being here and all of your being here, everybody, every guest, because really taking care of ourselves is so important. And you're doing just that by showing up with this wonderful support that you have. When I first was invited to bring this masterclass forward to the DARE Response app, I felt like I'd kind of come home to like, oh my gosh, these people get it. Like they're not prescribing the next thing for sleep to add to my list, but rather having us embrace sleep as a natural state and knowing our fight against it. And maybe we can change that pattern. to making it more of a natural, effortless type of sleep. And, you know, I'm speaking from a background many of you might be able to relate to. I remember about a year ago, I had melatonin by my bedside. I would take melatonin for sleep every night because I'd heard it was good for our sleep. And I have essential oils and, you know, sometimes the diffuser is going. And then sometimes I'd press on certain meridian points on my feet to induce sleep. And I'd be super aware of how much screen time I had and all these things. So I'd go to bed with this project list, this to-do list. And I wasn't sleeping any better than before I implemented those things. And it's not to say that any of those are not helpful, because there's evidence that a lot of them are, but it's the attitude to sleep. And also we start learning more about these tools as research goes on, and things like melatonin. Now they've discovered that if we take melatonin all the time, it inhibits our body's natural ability to create melatonin when we need it. So, you know, it's better reserved for if you're flying overseas and you've got a time change or something where you need that extra boost temporarily. My background is a certified yoga therapist. I work mostly with clients one-on-one, online like this, sometimes in person. And before COVID, I was hosting retreats in Thailand and Hawaii at least 2-3 times a year.
Hey, we got to get in on this.
Yeah,
Hawaii. I'm in my son's bedroom.
You bet. Stay in touch, Michelle, because that'll happen again for sure. And I hope to have more here in my home in the Canadian Rockies as well. So as a yoga therapist, my tools are working with the body and with meditation and breath and awareness of the body. There's spirituality. It points to spirituality, which to me is understanding who I am and how to be a better human being in this changing world. But there's no philosophical beliefs one needs to prescribe to. All religions are welcome, because my work is inviting us home to love, or maybe we might describe it differently, but that feeling of being at peace with ourselves and with the difficulties that come and go without turning away from them or pretending they don't exist, but more having the tools to meet all of life's diversity. So that's a little bit about me and my relationship to sleep. And now I sleep much better. And the thing is that it's such a relief to give up the fight and to lie down on the pillow and feel gratitude for that support, whether I sleep or not.
You guys hear that? Whether I sleep or not. Not my job to sleep. My body falls asleep. I just giving it like a scene to possibly fall asleep, right? Like we talk about this stuff all the time. It's nice to have a different voice that's kind of saying the same things, you know? And nothing in your meditations are about, like you said, what to do to sleep. Make sure you put your head on this side for X amount of time and you sniff your lavender and you get your Epsom salts. And I mean, I'd love to, if anybody in the chat could post, how many rituals, how much time do you spend trying to make yourself sleep? And we're usually trying to make ourselves sleep. I don't know, Julie, if you hear this, because there's such a story wrapped up in must sleep, have to sleep. If I don't sleep, this terrible worst case scenario is going to happen. And I'm spending my entire day during the day, basically bracing myself to put myself to sleep. Do you hear that a lot when you work with people?
Absolutely. And when one of the testimonials I have from a client was, you know, I think I shared with your team, as a long-term insomniac, as she labeled herself, I can now sleep. So, and part of it, you know, I didn't even realize actually what I was doing when I first brought in that saying through my sleep was, you know, the affirmation or the intention when I go to bed is, I sleep peacefully. Sleep comes easily to me. But from my training in meditation, it just seemed like a natural fit. So when I played with that and experimented it with my private clients, put that out there, and they were giving me these testimonials and these big reports, I realized that's it. And then as I did more research and I attended a session with Dr. Amir Khan from the Sleep Academy or Sleep Private Clinic in the States, and everything I learned was backing up that giving up the fight and welcoming whatever helps us to relax. And so in the guided meditations, that you'll find that intention is in one of them for sure within the Air Response app, and then woven into every of the seven steps. And I'm seeing some nice comments. Amar, thank you. Julie's meditations make me sleep without realizing it. And I think Amar hit on a really key point, is that we're not thinking about it, but it happens. Mm-hmm. And then later we wake up and go, oh, I was sleeping.
Right.
And if you two wouldn't mind, I would love to play devil's advocate a little bit, because I already can hear the, yeah, but.
It's coming already. I see them. Right? I see them. They're coming. Yeah, but.
Really. What if I have to get up early the next day and I have a big presentation where I have to be sharp and I am afraid that I can't focus, I can't do my job as I should, and that fear keeps me awake? How do I dare through that?
I know that feeling well. Thank you for asking that one, because I have been there. And I can't say that I don't go there still. Like, had this Q&A session been 4 hours earlier, I probably would have gone to bed with some anxiety about, will I get up on time? I've got to be awake and that kind of thing. So acknowledging that that's what's happening, giving yourself some compassion that it's out of care, that you want to be ready for whatever you have that next day. So you don't have to change that about you. It's changing your relationship to it. And then sometimes I find it's helpful to remind myself that I'm not going to die. I think I've heard this in your app, that it's not going to kill me. I'll show up, and I have before. How many other times have I felt like I didn't get enough sleep? And somehow by the end of that day, I got through the day really well. And another kind of trick for me is that I really don't drink a lot of coffee because of the caffeine, but I really enjoy a really good cup. So if I don't sleep well, or I know I've got a big event, I'll just tell myself before I go to sleep, oh, look what I have to look forward to. I've got this great cup from Clips Roasters on Main Street that I'm going to grab before that meeting. And I wouldn't otherwise. So making it a relationship of kindness and compassion. And all of you wanting to be on and ready for your work or your meeting or whatever it is, meeting your loved ones without being too grumpy, is it's coming out of care. And that's beautiful.
Right. But Julie, but there's so many studies that say it can lead to all these medical problems. So sleep is very important. And I was going to say that, but somebody on the chat beat me to it. So I'm just going to kind of say what they said, like, how could you not be worried? So the more I don't sleep, the more I'm worrying about creating some sort of health. Like, a lot of times anybody on the chat, sleep's tied to health anxiety, because what is this doing to my body? All right, better listen to Julie and meditate the shit out of this, and I'm going to get to sleep. So like, do you get that a lot too? So, you know, I know there's like the physical component attached to it too, that people are always concerned about. Like, you read anywhere sleep is good for you, but then it's like our approach that's sort of skewing the results.
Totally. And I so relate to that. And I get sucked down that whirlpool just like anybody else. I was listening to a podcast of a podcast host I really admire, and they talked about sleep for 2 hours. And I thought, this is awesome. I'm getting even more material, getting more information. But too much information is dangerous sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that the interviewer had a sleep regime 5 times as extensive as mine by now. And so we don't want to devalue the importance of sleep. We know it's a time that our brain rests, restores, rehabilitates. We know that sleep is like the number one thing for our body. We could be deprived of water. We could be deprived of food. But it's actually, if we were deprived of all of our sleep and didn't sleep at all, that's what would do us in first. So right. We don't want to discount the importance of sleep. And we know that our relationship to sleep can actually prevent us to sleeping, our anxiety about sleep. So we can just notice, that's important, I care, look at me trying really hard to sleep. And then it's kind of can become a little lighter in seeing the trying and the effort. And then coming back to the resources, you know, through the DARE response and the support that you have in shifting that relationship to more of a welcoming, allowing, mm-hmm. rather than a doing, right?
Absolutely.
Like meditation.
That's where most people are stuck. If you're meditating to do something, if you're setting the temperature in your room to do something, if you have like a 40 item checklist to do something. And so like, that's why it's important. Like, yes, sleep is important, but it's also important to learn how sleep happens. Sleep happens passively. And we're basically like, I think a lot of people are stuck actively trying to be passive.
Right.
And you can't do it like that. You can't actively try to be passive. Okay, well, now I'm going to listen to Julie every night. And then I'm going to sniff my lavender and get my Epsom salts and get my tea and get my this and sit. It's like, you're teaching people how to do less, not do more, right? To put power back into your body, your body's right. job to sleep.
Right. You hit on the subtlety of where we, even the not trying can become a doing.
Don't try.
Right. Yeah.
And am I doing it right? Am I doing it right?
Hold on. I got to write this down. Who's got a pencil in their hand? Who's writing stuff? Oh, I don't know exactly how to do nothing to sleep. Right. Very copious note takers.
Yeah, there you go. And so it's okay, you know, and that's where when we step back and see our response, then that's when we can shift our relationship to it. Even, and that's self-growth, isn't it? It's that noticing of the trying not to do something so hard that it becomes a project. Mm-hmm. And I noticed a comment about the sleep, you know, doing a sin versus deprivation of water and food. Thank you for that, Nicole. I appreciate that. And yeah, don't quote me on that one, but it will affect our body extremely a lot if we don't sleep at all. But this, thank you for bringing that up, because what I meant to finish is we do sleep more than we think. So those nights we think we haven't slept at all, the evidence shows we've slept. Even if it's under our radar, our body has had those little moments of sleep more than we think. So we actually won't die from that sleepless night, because our body will sleep when it needs to for self-preservation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, all my big exams I have done are not more than 3 or 4 hours of sleep, because I was so nervous, right? And you would think that, you know, things like a 4-hour exam, or this is the night you need to sleep, but it worked out every time, right? But the fear of what will happen and how this will affect me, of course, I was nervous about the exam itself, but also the what if I don't sleep enough? And as I was going through my own anxiety journey, I had a phase of insomnia that I have never experienced before. It was completely new to me to not be able to sleep, because I could just lie down. I was like sleeping like a baby. And it took me about, I don't know, maybe 10 days of really bad insomnia to hit rock bottom. Oh. And for me, rock bottom is to realize I know what I'm doing is not working, but I can't let go of it. And that moment, you're like, okay, it's not working. It's just not working. And I decided to flip the switch. I said, from today on, I'm going to be 100% willing not to sleep. And for me, everything in anxiety comes down to wanting to control something. Because I can have all the what-if thoughts and all the fears and anxieties. If I don't try to control them, it will just be a fleeting moment or a few fleeting moments. But it's always those two components. I have a fear And now I try to prevent that from happening. And in that control, in that fight, in that resistance of that worst case scenario is where we get stuck. Where all the disaster happens. And I always say, if your willingness is high, your anxiety might be high or low, but you will be able to move. You will become flexible. Instead of being rigid and stuck, it will still be painful, but you will start to be more flexible in what you experience. And this is where you can start to grow.
Right.
And as I really decided to be willing not to sleep, I prepared. I prepared a snack. I prepared a book. I was ready to not sleep. And it took me 3 days and I slept again like a baby. Now, not to say that, you know, my case is comparable, because everybody's case is different, individual, but I understand how it feels not to be able to sleep, to feel the effects the next day, and to lie there with anxious thoughts and rumination and physical sensations and trying really hard to sleep. It doesn't work. Try and increase your willingness, guys, to truly, truly want to not sleep. And Barry says, I think it's in the book, you can actually run towards that too, right? To say, I'm going to try my very best not to sleep tonight.
Mm-hmm. Clean the bathroom.
I want to stay awake. I want to ruminate the whole night. So come on, anxiety, bring it on. That is also a very good tip. Have you had any experience with that, Julie? Using this paradoxical intention with sleep?
Yes, I love how you shared your story, and it could resonate so fully with you, and how it relates not just to sleep, but to our overall connection to anxiety. So thank you for that. It was really, really well said. And yes, when we are not able to sleep, and I'm not sure if I'm going to answer your question directly, because I see one from Jackie that weaves into it, if that's okay. So bring me back if I get off course. But Jackie says, you know, what about that? That's great. Daytime anxiety increases. How to be passive in the middle of the night on your own in the dark without reassurance? So Ida, you know, gave a beautiful example of having being prepared for that waking. And then in a way, it's not as threatening too, right? When we go to bed knowing, oh no, but what if I wake up at 3 a.m. like I always do, or 3:05 or whatever? Then you know you've got that book, you've got that cup of tea or whatever you're going to do. For me, sometimes I will get out of bed and I'll sort a sock drawer or something really mm-hmm. mundane. I won't do anything with blue light or, you know, digital, but I'll change up the activity, and it can be helpful. Or I'll get up and sit up and meditate or do some of my breathing practices that I know help to also calm the nervous system. So having that preparedness for that, and when it happens, it's okay. And you may feel like you don't have the resources, but you do. You could have those resources set up for you, or download a sleep or a meditation or a sleep or music or a story or something that helps you, that's ready just to hit if you need to. But moreover, I think if you find that at that time you let go of that fight by leaning into support that works for you, mm-hmm. it will become less and less of an issue. One thing I want to add about sleep, it's easy to say, I'm going to let go. You know, I've kind of made light of it today, of all my quirks about sleep that I tried and preparations. And to say, Julie, just let go of those, that would not have landed well for me if I was telling myself that a year ago. And when I realized that letting go is a result of support, I can now look around and go, okay, if I let go of that, what support do I have that will catch me, that will help me to continue to sleep better and better every year rather than less and less? And that's what you're learning right here, and what resonates with you, and what doesn't, just throw it away.
And you know what I love, that you use the word support and not tool, helpful tools to sleep, because I think there is a subtle but big difference. Because if I come from a place of kindness and compassion towards myself, and I support myself by maybe not heating up my bedroom because it is too hot, I can't fall asleep, or it's just harder for me, or maybe taking a warm shower as an act of self-care and support. It's totally different as if I use these things as a tool to go to bed because I have to sleep. I know that it's a tricky one, you guys, but really intention is so, so important. Why am I doing these things? Am I eating that cup of ice cream because I want to stuff a feeling down, or am I eating it because I enjoy the taste of it? Intention is really important. So just to say, rituals and all these things, all these advice we give on sleep, if you use them with the right intention, they're helpful, but they can also be hindering your progress if you use them wrongly. Right.
And that's why attitude, this is the hardest thing. And this was my post the other week. It's the only thing I can't change your attitude. We can give you like suggestions on like, notice words that you're saying or certain things, but like it becomes this shift in a mindset, and it's hard to put that into words, but to go from this to this, to letting go, to trying to control things that are not in your control. And it's almost like you give your body the best chance at allowing it to fall asleep by growing your willingness to not sleep. It's another one of those paradoxical things, because then you're no longer treating it as danger. And when we have that anxiety fight piece come in, guess what trumps everything, including sleep? Active danger right now. So if every time you're going to bed, you're treating sleep as if I don't sleep, I'm going to die, in essence, then you are going to be in a heightened state fighting awakeness, right? And so we are going to be in this constant state of the fight of awakeness. And then we will only be safe if we sleep enough. So then we'll always have sleep labeled as danger, which is really where the problem is. It's not the fluctuating nights that you sleep or don't sleep. It's how we treat sleep, and it's how we treat when we don't sleep.
That's it. There was a bumper sticker in there I wanted to write down as we were talking. There was a few of them. That's just, it's so true. It's changing our approach to it, something to do, a project, something outside of ourselves, to something that's very natural. And Rayanne had a beautiful
answer. Really natural. And I think it's really important that we remind ourselves our body knows how to sleep. We don't need to teach it. It knows how to sleep since the day we are born. Mm-hmm. And the moment when we try to force it, this is when things become problematic. But trust that you have slept all these nights without your doing. Your body knew, it is intelligent, how to get there. So you will return to that. Have trust in that. Even if you're going through insomnia at the moment, it's like, oh my God, it feels horrible. It does feel horrible. I know that. I hate when I don't sleep at least 8 hours. Like 7 hours is never enough for me. I feel the effects, but it's uncomfortable. And as Michelle says, it's uncomfortable, yes. But is it fightable or noticeable? I love Michelle's term. Guys, write that down.
Is it fightable?
Is it fightable or is it noticeable? This is really, really helpful. And keep saying to yourself, my body knows how to sleep. I don't need to control this. And let go layer by layer. Maybe it won't be possible for you to move from, let me fight this, to, let go in an instant. Maybe it takes you a week. Maybe it takes you a month. Who cares? In the end, when you're looking back, you won't think about how many times or how many days you spend feeling bad because you haven't slept. You will only remember that, by letting go, my body returned back to sleep. And this is when you can also project positively into the future. You grow by allowing that pain that is happening at the moment. I know it's tough, but it is really worth it.
So Julie, I know we kept you a little bit longer than we said, but thank you so much. If anybody hasn't had a chance to listen to all of the masterclass, it's only available till the end of the month. So if you want any more of Julie, what else do you offer? Other workshops? Well, what else would you suggest? And how could people find you if they wanted to get some more information?
Thank you for asking. Well, you could go to bodymindease.com. And it's on my name, bodymindease.com, my little square there on the screen. Right. And I think it's linked in the app too. And in there, you might want to check out a Breathe Better Now program. So breathing is an amazing support for anxiety. To me, it's the number one resource for managing, for meeting anxiety and allowing it to fall away in a way that it does naturally, just like we fall into sleep, and to recognize and notice anxiety without getting hooked into it. So breathing can be a real great tool for our nervous system. So there's a free breathing program on there. So if you go to my website, it'll come up right front and center, and you can get that one for free. It's 7 days, 15 minutes a day of video guided breathing. And I'd like to invite one more inquiry. This is something I work a lot with one-on-one with clients and through my meditations. By the way, I also offer a Thursday drop-in eye rest yoga nidra meditation online. If you want to know more about that, just drop me a message. It's free. And this, what we're doing when the bumper sticker was just mentioned, that Michelle mentioned, is fightable, not noticeable. In meditation, we're inquiring, what is this that's noticing? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of freedom in being this that is noticing. And so when you're struggling to fall asleep, you might even ask yourself, who's noticing that I'm awake? Or who's trying to sleep? It could just shake things up enough for you to relax back into the part of your brain that isn't the active prefrontal cortex doing brain, but more into the noticing mm-hmm. being brain. That is a natural segue to letting go. So contact me through my website. I'd love to hear from you. And please send me feedback on how this masterclass is going for you. I love to hear from you and build on programs because of what you say and to respond to your questions. And thank you, Ida and Michelle. I'm just thrilled to be here. And I'm happy to step in the background and just hang out for the rest of your meeting if you'd like that, or if you'd like more space, then that's
whatever you'd like. You're welcome to stay. If you have someplace to go, that's fine. I know we only told you 20 minutes, but we usually run this for about an hour.
Okay. I'd love to be here and just support your group silently in the background.
Sure.
And awesome. Learn. Thank you.
Thank you for your input. I'm sure there's been so many valuable advices tonight, you guys. If you want to find more about Julie, you know the website, and make sure you listen into the masterclass, and I will too give you feedback. Cool. So we have a few questions.
Just remember, if we don't get to all the questions, which I'm sure we won't, listen back to the older webinars, listen to our last live Instagram that we did with Barry, with anybody on that was able to hear that. You'll see a lot of repetitive questions that come in. Also, if you just listen for the last 30 minutes and you didn't care about sleep and you're like, well, what the hell? I don't care about sleep. I want my question answered. Remember, it's not just about sleep. This was just the context, the topic that we addressed DARE in. So if you're fighting to sleep and your questions was about thoughts, you're probably treating the thoughts the same way somebody else is treating sleep. So same thing, to be into observer mode for thoughts, feelings, sensations, memories, what ifs. That's basically what everybody sends in questions on. So sleep is just another thing that you get to notice if you're asleep or not. You get to notice thoughts that I have. So just note that too, if we don't happen to get to your question, how this similar approach that we were just talking about sleep is the same kind of approach. What are you trying to force to battle to actively control? And what is something that's just to be noticed? And it's the fight that's keeping like the energy pumping.
And doing this is the hardest part. Doing nothing is the hardest
part. It's the hardest thing to do. It's the hardest thing to teach.
Hardest thing. Exactly. Thank you, Michelle. Why? Because anxiety is that emotion that wants to get us into the doing, right? Fight or flight. Fight or flight. And we're telling you to do nothing, to resist the urge to do something against it. And all that we teach is how you can flow with it. Now, all the guided visualizations and the advices we share in the app are all supposed to help you flow and ease into your sensations. So I'm going to start with one question, and then Michelle, should we go back and forth?
Yeah, let's go back and forth. Sure. You want to start? Okay.
Yeah. Hi, I'm stuck in a loop. I get up in the morning, then I sit there thinking how bad I feel, and I have a bit of depression, which I think it's to do with the anxiety. Now, there are a few things that stand out here in this question, Claire. I'm stuck in a loop. I get up in the morning, then sit there thinking how bad I feel. That is the first thing. Michelle, what do you have to say about I sit there and think how bad I feel?
I promise you, we did not plan this ahead of time. I drew this nice little habit loop for everybody. Okay. Just to talk about like all the other questions that came in. I didn't even have that one marked for this, but okay, guys, you see this? The habit loop. Feel free to Google this. If you're going to Google anything, you can Google this. Any anxiety program is going to talk about habits and the loop. There is a cue, and I wrote here, thoughts, feelings, sensations, what ifs, memories. So there's things that we might notice that we then do things about, okay? Which creates some sort of reward, some release. We feel somewhat in control, whatever, which then feeds the loop, okay? So the cue might be the thing that gets us going, but it's the doing that gets us stuck. It's the doing that labels this cue as important. And it's the routine. The routine is what's in our control. Okay. So, and if you guys want to play along this game in the chat, okay, here's the question again. I'm stuck in a loop. Okay. So now label the loop. I get up in the morning and then sit there thinking how bad I feel. And I have a bit of depression, which I think it's to do with the anxiety. Okay. So wake up. We probably, okay. No, the loop is not the cue. What happens is you wake up and you notice how you feel, right? And I found a feeling I don't like. And now I'm spending a lot of time and energy and effort, right? This stuff. Remember the stuff from my other video? Focus, attention, energy, and time trying to do something about a feeling. So you're sitting in bed all day long, like one of these is actionable and one of these are not. Okay. So the cue is something to be noticed and the routine is your action and behavior. So what can she change, my chat people? And what can she not? Can she change how she feels or can she change her actions of sitting in bed or not sitting in bed?
And maybe could she also change the way she thinks about how she feels?
Right. Right. And how you're treating how you're feeling.
Yeah. So we have the cognitive part and we have the behavioral part of cognitive behavioral therapy. So the two things she could do to help her get out of that stuck state, what could that be? She can change her action, Emma. Yes. And how could that look like? What could she change? Get up and high five yourself in the mirror. Love this. Take the flashlight of her brain and turn it to the world. Wonderful. Thank you, Rob. Sandy, get up and engage. Exactly.
Oh, maybe work out in the morning. And it's not to get rid of this. It's to treat this differently. Let go of the stuff that's not actionable. So I get to notice how I feel, but then I get to choose what I do. So if I'm going to do anything, kind of like this, all everything we were talking about for the first half an hour, all the doing is not to then check to see, is it gone yet? Do I feel better yet? Am I asleep yet? Right? Is the thoughts gone yet? Do I feel better yet? It's the doing is to show that this is what's important and this becomes unimportant. Okay. So it's like how I feel is noticed and allowed and brought with me while I shift, like Rob wrote, shift my focus to what I'm choosing to do while I feel. Do you guys see how there's so much of this? Is this what we end up doing? How we decide, oh, if I woke up and I felt good, great, then I can just go about my day. But if I woke up and feel bad, I change my entire routine because of how I feel, you know? And that sends this message to ourselves that this feeling's good, this feeling's bad. This feeling pops up, better do something about it. And so we're in fight mode, fighting the wrong things. Okay. So this is what we change. We don't really get to change this, but we get to change this and how we treat this.
And You guys, keep in mind, anxiety is just a feeling, and usually it doesn't have one source. Oh, I feel anxious today because yesterday I had two cups of coffee instead of one, right? It's different when you wake up and you feel really frustrated or upset or you have a headache. Yes, of course, it's normal that you ask, hey, what is going on? Why am I feeling this way? But if you already know that you're going through an anxious phase and your nervous system is ramped up and you are more sensitive to the first cortisol release in the morning, then leave it be like that. Oh, expect that you're going to be anxious in the morning. Maybe you're going to wake earlier than usual and you're going to feel already, ooh, hyper. Okay, well, I'm anxious. But instead of sitting now there, what is going on with me? Yeah, anxiety's favorite question. Just what is it? What is wrong with you? Why are you feeling this way again and again? And how will my day look like today? What could I do to get rid of this? This is rumination and it keeps you stuck. Never, ever, ever. Not once is rumination helpful in dealing with anxiety. Never. Note, is it noticeable? Is it fightable? Oh, I feel anxious. And maybe, you know what? Maybe I'm also a little bit sad that I'm still anxious. That's fine. I can be compassionate and kind towards what I feel. So this is the cognitive part. You diffuse by reminding yourself what is going on and answering that question, what is wrong? Oh, I have anxiety. My nervous system is ramped up. I'm just sensitive to the first cortisol release. All right, now what can I actively do to help myself? Not to get rid of this, but to be kind to myself while I feel this. Mm-hmm. You are kind to your kids and to your friends when they go through a rough phase, right? You know, like, what is wrong? Why are you feeling like this again? Are you not over it yet? You know what? I think today is not going to be your day. You're going to suck today. All the things that could go wrong will go wrong for you today. You don't say that to your friends. You don't say that to your kids. But you say, you know what? It is what it is. Let's do the best we can with what we have, and then engage in life.
Right. How you feel, how you treat how you feel, and how you treat yourself while you feel. Right. So those are kind of, we're also stuck on how we feel.
Say that again, slower. Everybody.
Bumper sticker.
Write down.
How you feel, noticeable. How I treat how I feel, actionable. How I treat myself while I feel, compassion.
Ding. Okay. Awesome daily dare. You need to write
it down. Right? Somebody post that in the Facebook page to remind us. All right. So I have four questions here that can be all put towards a whole chat about anticipatory anxiety. Mm. Okay. So it looks like we could put them all together. I'm struggling the most with anticipatory anxiety right now. Days before anything is planned, like an appointment, going to do something fun, a trip to town with my husband. I constantly think about it and worry about it or having a panic attack. Similar lines with sleep, right? Who's spending all day long worrying about if I'm going to sleep at night, right? Always kind of anticipating some worst case scenario. I get anticipatory fear approaching bridges, which is exacerbated by red lights and full-blown panic attacks driving over bridges. How do you overcome this? It's something that seems different. I'll repeat that feel thing again, Julia.
I'll write it down. I'm writing it down.
Here's another one. Again, these are totally different scenarios, but it's all the same thing. I'm about to get my second COVID dose and I know the vaccine is good for me, but I'm really anxious about possible bad side effects. Any tips on how I can stop this constant worrying, right? And to how I'm going to feel. Like, you don't even get to choose how you feel in the present, but now we're fighting how we're going to maybe possibly feel in the future. And the last one, trying best to implement the dare response. My biggest challenge is eating out and a fear of being sick. This is something I have struggled with for a very long time, but it seems to have escalated or made me feel more trapped post-lockdown. I do try to rationalize it when I get to the event. It's generally fine and I enjoy it. But for me, it's the endless anticipatory anxiety rather than the event itself that is normally the main issue. It is frustrating because no matter how many times I have eaten out and enjoyed it, I still have at times debilitating anxiety that the next time will go badly. At this stage, I think I am more afraid of the anticipatory anxiety and endless ruminating beforehand than the actual event itself. This is such a good question. Can you give me any advice on how to break this cycle? My husband thinks it's like a bad habit or having an addictive thought process. I would welcome any tips. Oh, and apologies for the long-winded sentences. It can be hard to articulate anxiety.
Oh, we understand.
We get it.
So a long question, very simple answer. And I hope that you are not going to be disappointed. But it's really about your willingness. If you would be willing to experience a panic attack, if you would be willing to experience anxiety while having dinner, you would not have any anticipatory anxiety. But you have the what if thoughts, and your flashlight is turned on them, and you're like, yeah, what if this happens? And now what can I do to prevent that, or to control that, or to alleviate my anxiety in this situation? What could I do to not panic? And if you ask yourself that question, what could I do? Even if it's just subtle in the back of your mind will start this.
Do. Oh, yeah. See, guys? Yeah. Do. What can I do?
Let me go and go back to the app, to their app. What do I need to do in order not to feel this? This is where everybody gets stuck. And this is this bittersweet pill we need to swallow, because it's the not doing and the giving up and the letting go of that control that will in turn make you feel better. It's this paradox. You will feel better, but not as a direct goal, but as a consequence mm-hmm. of letting go. So try this out the next time you have an appointment or a meeting or a dinner and your anticipatory anxiety comes up. Instead of trying to diffuse that thought, to not feel it or to alleviate the anxiety, tell yourself, oh yeah, I will have a panic attack there. End of story. I know I will have one, but I'm going to go anyway. And I'm not going to do anything to try and control that. Your anxiety will peak that first second when you think that, because it's like, what? You're not going to do anything about this, but this is dangerous. Yep, not going to do anything. I'm just going to leave it as is. And then you will notice it peaks, but then it subsides really quickly if you do this with the right attitude.
Right. And what's happening is you're in different tenses. This is one of my texts to myself at 3 a.m. that maybe will become some sort of daily dare blurb for me. But like, what tense is your tension in, right? Present, past, or future? So really, like, you fight present danger. So tension lives in the present. It's only useful in the present tense. Okay. It's not useful if you're presently fighting the past tense, memories. This is how trauma work is based into the present perpetual fight of stuff that happened from the past. And with anticipatory anxiety, it's the other side of that, the perpetual present fight of your idea of the future. So like, before when you're in the middle of this anticipatory anxiety, what tense is this problem? Is it in the present tense, or is my problem in the future tense, but I'm fighting it right now? And that's where we get this weird disconnect where we're like, oh, better start revving my engines. Why? Oh my gosh, I'm going out to dinner in 3 weeks. So you're fighting an idea of some worst case shitty scenario of the future. It's never like, what if I burp once? It's always like, what if I freak out and I strip naked and I have a panic attack and I lose my job and now I'm homeless on the street? It ends up in some worst case scenario. And so we're fighting anything about the future. Anticipatory anxiety is the fight of your own imagination. That's it. You've decided, maybe from past experience, oh, I had a panic attack in this restaurant last time. What if, favorite two words, what if it happens again? And then we go into fight mode. So now your body's sending you fear to fight, but it's in the wrong tense. You've got present fear, but a future idea of a problem. And so that's why your energy keeps cranking out, because what happens is if you go to that restaurant, if you go, I just got to get through this restaurant, don't have a panic attack, and you fight, and then you go to the restaurant and you don't have a panic attack. It's weird, but it almost reaffirms this idea. Oh, good thing she thought through dinner, because the bad thing didn't happen. Ooh, so next time she goes, we're going to keep her energy pumping to make sure the bad thing doesn't happen. We think, but the bad thing didn't happen. Everything was fine. What the hell? Shut up, alarm. Why can't I just go out? Because if you're spending the time leading up to it, I don't care about the thoughts. Again, I care about how you're treating thoughts. If you're preparing for danger, right? So if you're spending every day preparing for how you're going to feel, like Aida said, then you're not willing to feel. Then you're treating a feeling as dangerous. So first thing, do keep all the tenses in the same place, right? So right now I'm thinking about the future. So I'm having a right now thought, but the content is future oriented. So what you're actually fighting is a right now thought. And there's no dangerous thoughts. you're not going to have a thought that puts you in any more danger. Okay. So it's learning how to let go of the fight of that. And I use the terms a lot, let's see. Okay. So if you are like, I will absolutely attend to that situation in the present tense when it becomes attendable, right? But I can't attend to anything that doesn't exist yet. Okay. We think we're fighting something from to not end up existing. It's just keeping us stuck in fight.
But so, it will happen, Michelle. It will happen. I will have the panic attack.
Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. Let's see. And if you have a panic attack, you deal with the panic attack. We're pre-dealing with things that aren't even happening. So we're constantly in dealing mode, and like waiting for danger to show up. And so that's why like I love the 21 second countdown. Perfect for this stuff. Perfect for anticipatory anxiety. Perfect for health anxiety, which is often, again, everything future oriented stuff. 21 second countdown is what fear showed up. What's happening right now, right? Fear showed up and okay, well, let's see. Let's see if danger shows up now because obviously I'm prepared for and I'm ready. So let's see, whatever's going to happen, let's have it happen right now. And then I'll fight that. Then there's something fightable. There's danger right now and fear right now. And we use fear to help us fight danger. This is always the piece that's missing, guys. If there was actual present danger, I would tell you to do the complete opposite of all of this. Run for your life, run away from murderers, right? Run towards thoughts and feelings and sensations. But it's like anticipatory anxiety is you spending a lot of time ruminating and actively planning how you might feel in the future. And so that's why you're exhausted and tired and you're almost reinforcing fear, right? If I went again with the attitude too of like, if I spend a lot of time trying to desensitize, do exposure therapy, if I'm scared of dogs, and every time I go in that little pen of dogs, I go, oh my gosh, just get through it. Oh, here we go again. I have to do it again and then fight. And then I leave. I'm reaffirming that fear because my
action. Traumatizing.
Yeah. I'm acting as if it's dangerous.
Yeah.
So act as if there's no danger in the present. And then should danger show up in the present, you will deal with it then. Anticipatory anxiety is always you right now finding the idea of the future. So give a nod to the future ideas and then drop the fight of that part. Does that make sense, guys? Even though they were like four different scenarios, it was all kind of written the same way.
That sure made sense to me, Michelle. And if I can chime in, that you may have discussed this, but it's also reflected in some of the ancient teachings, particularly from Buddhism, as the second arrow. So the first arrow is, you know, what's happening in the moment. The second arrow is our going into the future tense of what's going to happen. So I have a scratch in my throat. That's what's present. My second arrow is, oh my goodness, I might be out of work for the next week. And then the third arrow is, oh, I've got COVID. And then the fourth arrow is that means I've given it to everybody else. But if we come back to the present tense, so I just love how you brought those tenses in. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah. Cause where, you know, it's, we kind of go on that runaway train.
You know, we had it yesterday in our Dear Advanced calls. We talked about mindfulness and how the present moment is very boring for our mind. There's nothing going on here in the present moment. Everything is very boring. So let's go back to the past and look at our failures, because if we do that, we can make sure we don't repeat that. And also let's look into the future, because the future could be scary. And let's think about what we could do to prevent that from happening. Right? And anxiety, usually, you know how this goes. Oh, this is because of, and this now means that. Right? Oh, I have a sensation. This is because of, and this now means that this and that is going to happen. So everything we're saying, everything comes back to, is it noticeable or fightable? Being aware that our mind wanders usually to scary places or comes up with false interpretations of what this might mean at the moment, what I'm feeling, and then drags those ideas into the future and of course exaggerates them, you know, massively. So practicing, oh, I had an anxious thought, diffuse, or becoming aware. Oh, what if I have a panic attack in that restaurant? Diffuse by, oh yeah, then I will have one and then I will deal with it. It's really about that part. I will deal with it. If you would know 100% that you can deal with it, you would not fear it. But it's always this fear of what if I can't cope? What if it is too much?
Right.
Right. And then you allow that energy that your body has already produced in response to that thought to be present without catastrophizing over it, and then engage coming back to the present moment and doing whatever you were doing. And then repeat. And in the beginning, you will be so fused with your thoughts that you won't find that there is any separation between you and the thought. There's the thought, you feel totally fused with it, your body's already reacting, and you will have that zap of adrenaline. This will happen. Be prepared for that. But every time you practice those steps, become aware, diffuse, allow, and engage back in life, you will create more and more of that distance until you come to a place where you are in this observer mode. You notice like, oh, there's a thought. It's not, oh, it's here. I am the thought. And this is the only possibility. But, oh, that's a possibility. Mm-hmm. Okay, might or might not. Takes practice to get there, but it's very worth it.
Right. And Claire wrote a great comment here. Thank you so much. This advice is so great and a relief. I don't have to think my way out. It's just going to take me time to let my brain know that preparation and ruminating is the problem and not the solution. I'm telling you, if you get that key, that's the ticket out of this. Not because we're staring at a problem and we're doing this to what we're staring at. We think this is the problem. And I'm telling you, this is the problem. Okay. It's trying to fight away things that are not fightable. So, oh, I can't stop staring. I've got to stay in bed and stare at these feelings. Then this is what's keeping this stuck. Okay. So dare is for this stuff, for ruminating, for all your attention, for focus, for fighting, for resistance. That's what I want everybody to focus on. I'm fighting right now, ideas of the future, not fightable.
Okay, we are almost out of time. I would say we have one more question, Michelle.
Yeah, sure. Let's
go. I like this one because I think this is also applicable to other manifestations of thoughts. How to manage anxiety of flying alone when you have lots of intrusive thoughts about deeper issues? And I thought that this is a really good question because there are so many things implied here. How to manage anxiety of flying, number one, alone. Number two, when you have lots of intrusive thoughts. Number three, about deeper issues. Number four, a lot of layers here, right?
Or even more, how to doing, manage, control, and then the rest, right? It's almost like so many of this, yeah. You know.
No, intrusive thoughts always revolve around deeper issues, and they scare us so much because they usually center around things that are really dear to us. And where stakes are really high. Having a panic attack at a restaurant, yeah, it's uncomfortable, but an intrusive thought about maybe harming somebody that you love, ooh, it's a different level. And it's interesting that you say, how to manage anxiety of flying alone when you have lots of intrusive thoughts. I think what you mean is when you have those intrusive thoughts at home, it feels more safe to experience them at home as opposed to having them when you're in an airplane and are alone. Meaning if someone would be with you, they could help you cope better or prevent you from actually acting on these intrusive thoughts. So I hope with this answer, you can see that how much negativity and how this spiral goes. An intrusive thought is dangerous because what if I act on it? And if I have those thoughts on a flight, the risk is higher that I act on them. And if I'm alone, the risk is even higher. Right? So stakes are high. And the further I am away from home, the more the likelihood that I will act on them. I hope you see how absurd this is, because an intrusive thought is a thought, a thought, a thought, a thought, and just a thought and nothing else. Just the content is different. And because stakes are higher, you fight them stronger. The higher the stakes, the more fight there is. But the more you fight them, the harder they bounce back. You are as safe with your intrusive thoughts alone at home or in a group of people or at a therapist's office. It does not make any difference. This idea that you need a place to be safe or you need somebody else to be safe so you don't act on your intrusive thoughts is just absurd. And this is something that you need to remind yourself of. And intrusive thoughts are best treated as any other thoughts. Notice them. Are they fightable or noticeable? Thank you, Michelle. This is brilliant. Oh, this is just noticeable. Right? And you allow them to be there. And don't fall into the trap of arguing with them. This is what a lot of people do. They mean well, but it actually causes a lot of difficulties. There comes a thought, what if you harm somebody? Oh, I would never do that.
Yeah, but what I love them. I won't do that. Look, let me tell you exactly why we're safe right now. Now shut up, alarm. Be quiet. I'm fine. I'm fine. It's fine.
But what if just this one time you snap and you actually do it? Mm-hmm. You know, Buffy, do you remember that newspaper from that person that went crazy and stabbed, you know, its family? Yeah, but that's not me. But that's not me, because now you start to reason. All of this engaging with intrusive thoughts are just going to make them bigger. Are they noticeable or are they fightable? They're only noticeable. Let them come and let them go. Imagine you have two doors in your head. One door where the thought comes in and the other door is open too. Don't try to push it out. It's not going to work. But also don't keep your front door shut. Oh my God, what if it comes? What if it comes? Leave that one open and leave that one open. A thought is just a thought. It's just a thought. Will forever be just a thought, and you will not act on them, no matter where you are, in a plane or at home.
Because in those words just imply that I have to do something if I'm anxious, and I have to do something about thoughts. And being alone is inherently more dangerous than being with somebody. Being in a plane is inherently more dangerous if I have more thoughts. And it just, it's not true. It's not true. The simple answer to this is, How to manage anxiety of flying alone when you have lots of intrusive thoughts about deeper issues. You're allowed to feel anxious on a plane. It's not illegal. You don't even have to pay extra for it. You have to pay extra for every freaking thing else on an airplane, right? You don't even have to check it. I can feel anxious on an airplane. I can feel sad on an airplane. I can feel horny on an airplane. I can feel whatever the hell I want to feel on an airplane. Not danger. I mean, some people join the Mile High Club, whatever. But like, I can also have thoughts I like, and I can also have thoughts I don't like. It's my brain. It's portable. I can have thoughts I don't like on a boat. It's like, you know, green eggs and ham, Dr. Seuss. I can have green eggs. I can have bad thoughts I don't like with a goat. I can have thoughts I don't like. They're not intrusive thoughts. You guys know how much I hate that term. We label them as intrusive thoughts when we start treating them like intruders, as if they don't belong. And if you treat something like they don't belong, your alarm will help you clearly see what you're trying to get rid of. And they belong in your brain. Where the hell else do thoughts stay? That's where they are, in your brain. They're not in your pancreas, right? So you just found thoughts you don't like. Leave them alone. That's what, there's nothing to do. How do you deal with anxiety when you have lots of intrusive thoughts? Well, you just watch a movie while you have thoughts you don't like. You can watch a movie while you also notice how you feel, but you can direct your focus to what's actionable and then notice what's noticeable. Same thing. And the more you really pay attention to what's happening right now, oh, it's a thought. Oh, it's a feeling. Oh, it's, oh, noticeable, noticeless. Oh, I'm on fire. Oh, okay. That's actionable. Better do something about that. And the more you say, like, look at where is your fight being directed? And if it's on a thought, feeling, sensation, memory, what if, fight's going to the wrong place. Drop the fight, allow the discomfort, allow the feeling.
Yes. And then you will move from, this is a question also, Michelle, we get a lot. How do I know I'm doing it correctly? How do I know it works? Right. And it's never about the absence of sensation. This is never the goal of DARE, and it shouldn't be yours. Your goal should always be to become more flexible in your experience. Right? When we fight something, as I said earlier, we become rigid, we become stuck, we can't move. We are at the mercy of the thought or the sensation. If it is too intense, okay, now I can't move. Now it's getting too much. And if it's less, oh, I'm having a good day. I did not have a panic attack at the grocery store. That was a good day. No, it was not. For you, yes, for that moment, but a really good day is when you can say, I'm going to go to the grocery store and maybe I'll have a panic attack. And if I have one, I'm not going to run. I'm going to allow my body to do its thing. And then I'm going to go back to picking the best oranges. And then I'm going to go home and not obsess all the whys that I had a panic attack. Right. So my stress system was activated for whatever reason, whatever. Your willingness to experience panic attacks or anxiety, to not stir it around and add stories to it, is really what your goal should be. And because when you get there, this is when the sensation starts to subside naturally, because your body is not pumping you full of stress hormones, which creates those sensations. And when you do the allowance part correctly, what you will feel is a shift. I always like to say you move from suffering to pain, and then from pain to being very uncomfortable, and then from very uncomfortable to uncomfortable. And these are how the stages go.
Right.
But moving from suffering to pain, it feels like you're more flexible. You have more room to breathe, and you don't. It doesn't go, oh, thought A, feeling B, and reaction C. Everything in one instance. You may still have thought A, intrusive thought, and that may still cause you B, a zap, but your C maybe turns into a Z. Like, oh, I had the thought. Oh, that caused me fear. And now I'm going to go back to chopping my carrots.
Mm-hmm. Right. Unimportant. It's unimportant discomfort. When it's discomfort geared, like look with something important, attend to the importance. You don't attend to fear. You don't need to do anything about fear. Fear helps you attend to danger. So when there's no danger, we attend to the next best thing. We start attending to fear. You don't need to calm down. You don't need to get to sleep. You will never fight yourself to sleep. When you let go, your body falls asleep. Maybe, maybe not. Let's
for
see.
A while. Exactly. Well, you guys, that was so much fun. Julie, thank you again. Michelle.
Julie, pleasure. Will you come back? I like having you on the call.
I would love to anytime. I just really enjoyed this. And I'm so grateful for both of you ladies and everybody here that you are here together and you have this amazing community. Thank you for letting me in.
Sure. And thanks for staying. So Barry told us this morning in a meeting that this, our newest app update is going to include on a section of the app, a whole area where you can access last month's recording. But then when each new month will come and replace the old one. Okay. So you're not going to have like 4 years worth of these. It'll always be the last month's recording. So pretty soon you'll be able to like just click the button and watch the whole video on the app. And then a place to, what else did he say? To submit questions. Oh, and a date of the next, of when the next call is. So, you know, when you see that come up, put a notification in your phone to set a reminder for, to call in. I mean, paying for it, right guys? So, come get your money's worth out of it. They're monthly. Yes, somebody's they're monthly right now. They will be emailed to you. You will get the email link probably by tomorrow. And then hopefully by the time the, app is updated, you'll just be able to open your app and see the video posted on there.
And if you're not sick of us by now, you are invited to join us on Dear Advanced. I think we say this after every call, and we really don't want to sell you something, but as
we're not, but just people always ask. We have Zoom calls. If you like this and you want to do this more often, you can join the calls with us. And we, you know, you can do like three of them a month with us. And it's more like it's a group format. And it's a much smaller Facebook group and all the app stuff that we have. So,
and we cover a lot. Yeah, we cover a lot of different things. All that we said here, we have already said in other shapes and forms and colors. So the main message is, of course, always the same. But we also go into more detail on how to apply this to specific situations. And we also do a lot of Dear Resilience, meaning we talk about meditation and mindfulness and breathing and nutrition and exercise and all of these things, relationships, how to deal with feelings. All the things that make
habits, right? Yeah.
The stronger
gratitude,
never as a tool to get rid of our anxiety, but just to become more resilient.
Right. And oh, and somebody posted, and you do that on dareresponse.com. It's called Dare Advanced.
Yeah. Dare
Advanced. There's always new people that come on. We're not going to tell you anything we're not telling you here. This is not to gather information. This is to help you with implementation. So it's more about like taking the tools and information and acting as if this is not danger, practicing, allowing yourself to not fight. We just get people that are really good at doing things. Don't sign up for this and 40,000 more classes to fix this once and for all. Wrong mindset, right? Sign up for this to teach you kind of how to do less.
Yeah. And the family feel there is absolutely awesome. It's a big family of very kind and supportive people who keep each other accountable. Yeah. Love to see you there. Thank you so much, guys. Have a good
day. Right, guys. Thank you for joining, Julie. Thank you so much. We'll see you guys next month.
All the best to everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
thank you for listening to the DARE podcast. The DARE app has over 1 million downloads and is helping people all around the world to overcome anxiety and panic attacks. You can download the app for free at dareresponse.com.